and welcome back to Family Law, a case for children. Before we delve into the case for children, we must first look at the introduction of Christianity in England and by extension Catholicism, which at the time was the dominant religion. Its importance arises from the fact that in early Britain, religion played an integral role in society, and as a result, it affected every aspect of life, including the welfare of children. Our journey begins in 410 AD, when the Roman Emperor Honorius writes to Britain saying to look to their own defenses and refuses to send help from the incursion of the Saxons, the Scots, the Picts, and the Angles. The past 400 years in Britain, the Romans were dominant, and this was seen with the construction of villas, the baths, strategic warfare, among other things. But now they have other battles on the home front to fight. The result was the withdrawal from England. Now we have the Anglo-Saxons, who were called pagans because of their worship of different gods and supernatural forces. They were the earliest speakers of the Old English language. They principally told their stories orally and depicted them visually, and as a result, little is known about their practices pre-410 AD, and by extension, how children were considered in their society. Writings about their lives did not come from first-hand knowledge, but rather from scholars writing later, such as Bede, who died in 735 AD. And although the Old English-speaking pagans dominated Eastern communities after the decline of Roman rule, communities of Romano-British Christians survived in the West, and they produced men such as St. Patrick in the 4th century and Gildas, who is believed to have written The Ruin of Britain in the 6th century. A major factor when we're considering Christianity was the conversion of the Anglo-Saxon rulers in the 6th century. The then Pope Gregory sent missionaries led by Augustine, who would later become the first Bishop of Canterbury. They arrived in 597 AD and converted the Kentish King Ethelbert and his court. Apart from religion itself, just as important was the access to writing technologies such as the Greek alphabet and the Latin language. This allowed for extensive text on parchment as opposed to inscribing very short inscriptions on wood or bone or stone, as was the custom. The new writing was used to create law codes and charters to transfer property. And during the reign of Ethelbert, the laws of Kent were written down for the first time, and administrative documents such as charters were used. And I find that very fascinating, the way they were able to regulate the use of property without written law codes and do it well for a long period of time. I think that's astonishing. But let's move on. The conversion to Christianity was also influenced by political connections. Ethelbert married Bertha, a Christian princess from the area of Paris. It was necessary to mention this point, save for my namesake. I couldn't help myself. Another result of the conversion was the cultural exchange between the Anglo-Saxons, the Christians in Ireland and in Europe. And when the Christian rulers died, they were replaced by pagan rulers. And as a result, some adopted Christian practices and inculcated it into pagan practices. And again, according to Bede, in the 7th century, Raedwald of East Anglia had temples which contained both Christian altars and pagan idols. Monasteries were important because they served as religious houses for monks, but also as a base for which to travel from surrounding communities. They were also the main repositories for learning and scholarships in medieval England. The monasteries became increasingly powerful, and by the Middle Ages, they housed internationally renowned schools, produced stunning masterpieces, and were the center of healing and medieval knowledge. And as we could see, this is an astounding part that a religion played in the society. But although Christianity played this important role in unifying the people culturally, the catalyst was the invasion of the Vikings. And the Viking invasion began in the 9th century. They raided the coast, they looted treasures and captured slaves. And one of the most lucrative places targeted were the monasteries, hence the reason it was mentioned earlier, because of the wealth they held, the silver and gold chalices, the plates, the bowls, the crucifixes, and most importantly, an unarmed clergy, which made for very easy prey. They captured slaves from the monasteries on a number of occasions, and this is important because parents gave their children to the church as oblations, and those children in some of those raids were also captured as slaves. And in later episodes, we will discuss oblations to the church and what it actually meant for a child who was given to a church. But we shall move on to Christianity. And due to the raids, many monasteries were abandoned, but they still held their importance. And by the 10th century, churches were being reformed to be more uniformed. If you recall, I mentioned earlier that the pagan, Christian, and Christian practices intermingled. The emphasis of the reform was on education, art, literature, book production, and musical composition. They also highlighted the need to preach to the people and reform the whole society. Just a quick recap. The introduction of Christianity, Catholicism, led to a more extensive text being written, and as a result, formal law codes came into effect. We can also see the impact of this, as most of the documentary evidence of the Old English is mediated through the church. Now, when it's mediated through the church, it means that they wrote it and they converted whatever, translated, I think it's a better phrase to use, that Old English language to what we know today. That is a very powerful place to be, a very powerful position to have, and the church had that. And as we journey through this podcast, we will notice the influence religion had on the making of laws and how one's idea of righteousness affected how children were treated. The first 1900 years, Christianity made its mark on society and the welfare of children. As time passed, its influence, like that of the crown, dwindled to that of the present era, where its influence is barely felt or noticed in today's society. So please do join me next week as we continue in the Anglo-Saxon era discussing family law, a case for children. See you then.